Another week, another round of layoffs, this time in one of the few successful VR companies. Plus, a popular city simulator had to remove virtual landlords because they were too much like real landlords. Tonight is June 16th, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Happy Dad of Boy Day. I have God of War here sitting next to me because that's Dad of Boy, right? That's what we should be doing. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a Father's Day edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you are joining us here live on this Sunday night, thank you so much. Welcome. We do tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us. Interact with the show directly. But if you're out and you can't be there because, oh, it's Father's Day, it's Dad of Boy Day, whatever. We are a podcast. You can find us on the podcast feed, and you can also join our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord, and that is where you can find more things that we say and suggest topics for future episodes of the show over there. And I have a little music thing that plays just to make sure that people can find the stream. Stream starts about 4 minutes. The show starts about 4 minutes after the stream starts. And the song was jamming so much because we play from Overclock Remix because we won't get DMCA'd for Overclock Remix stuff. And it was a jamming song. And I almost forgot to hit record. But I did not forget to hit record. We are actually recording, so it's all good. I know I said, you know, happy Father's Day. That can be a father of anything. Right now, I am not a father of anything living, but we have all these, like, Grogu's around. So my wife was like, happy Father's Day. You've got all, you know, little baby Yodas everywhere, and you're their father. So, because a lot of people, like, my father passed away 11 years ago. So I know sometimes this is a hard time for people, or, you know, you have a lot of father figures in your life, and so you're celebrating all of them. It's not just the biological ones that we are celebrating. It's all of them. Furry fathers, fathers of Funko Pops, dad of boys in video games. Next year, by this time, I'm hopefully going to be a furry father again, but still not one right now. Still not there. We still got to do some house renovation stuff first before we bring cats into the house. Anyway, I know I said I was going to be here each and every Sunday night, but not in 2 weeks. So I am going to be hosting at Summer Games Done Quick 2024 in just a couple weeks up in Minneapolis. It is going to be benefiting Doctors Without Borders, and I am going to be there kind of early on in the week. So Sunday, starting at about, right now it says 3:50 p.m. Eastern. That's going to change. It's going to be either earlier or later. I don't know. But I will be hosting for Mega Man 9, Any Percent by Slurpee Ninja, Ratchet & Clank, All Gold Bolts on the PS3 by Marathon Man, and Splatoon 3 Side Order New Game Plus Marie's Palette by Tones Balone. So that is going to be Sunday from about 3:50 Eastern until 7 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. So that is 2 weeks from today. That is June 30th. And then on Tuesday evening, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern, I will be back doing Like a Dragon Gaiden, The Man Who Erased His Name, Any Percent by Tapioca, who has been on the couch with Froob. So Froob is not making the trip. Tapioca is making the trip. And then after that, Mass Effect 2, Any Percent, New Game Plus by Sanjan. So I am Commander Shepard's favorite host on the Citadel. That's what it comes out to. There is going to maybe be some singing on Tuesday evening in between the two games. It all depends on the generosity of the donators. So it is benefiting Doctors Without Borders. You can find out more information about that at gamesdonequick.com starting on June 30th, and then July 2nd is the Tuesday. And if you are wondering when the dog will be speedrunning, that is on the evening of July 4th. Ken Griffey Jr. presents Major League Baseball, being run by the Shiba Inu Peanut Butter and the human that Peanut Butter owns, JSR. So let's get into the news that I am so tired of talking about, this type of news. However, it was interesting to me the admittal by the higher-ups as to why this layoff happened, how they screwed up, and what they are doing to make sure they don't do this again, because this is not a layoff that's because they acquired too many companies and couldn't afford to run them. This is very much an independently owned studio that is not publicly traded. There's, as far as I know, there's not shareholders. Like, there's no public shareholders. I know that. But there might be an equity firm or angel investors or something like that. But we're talking about VRChat. And they laid off 30% of their workforce. And they admit the reason they laid off 30% of their workforce is because they made some really dumb decisions in how they structured the company that are extremely dumb when you look at them in hindsight. 2020 hindsight is a very powerful thing. So Graham Gaylor, the CEO of VRChat, actually posted on their site the email that he sent out to employees. And they said, this is the full email. We're redacting specific names and email addresses, but the content is what all the employees said. And it was pretty thorough. It starts off saying, quote, today I have some very hard and sad news to share. We're reducing the size of our team by around 30% and saying goodbye to many talented team members in the process. This is the hardest change we've had to make at VRChat, and Jesse and I take full responsibility for the decisions that brought us here. First off, there is no mention of them taking a pay cut or anything. That being said, this is probably more of a, you know, startup to small business, mid-sized company, maybe. They may not be making that much. CEOs of small companies aren't billionaires. So keep that in mind. It continues. Our responsibility is to maintain and grow the space we've created in VRChat, where so many people have found friends, family, and happiness, and most of all, to bring that opportunity to everyone. Although difficult, this decision enables us to uphold our responsibilities for many years to come. I want to talk about this mainly because VRChat is actually one of the few success stories still going in virtual reality. There's VRChat and there's Beat Saber. And there's not that many more. And VRChat, honestly, is doing what Mark Zuckerberg has gotten billions of dollars in investment to create with their Meta Horizon Worlds, whatever they're calling their thing. VRChat is it. Like, VRChat is doing it today. And it's not controlled by Meta or Alphabet or Microsoft or anybody like that. Mike Def says, and 30% doesn't feel like much, but for a small company like VRChat, it is a lot. As someone who has worked at a company recently that has done layoffs, and it's like, oh, you know, yeah, they're only laying off, you know, 20% of the workforce. Well, when you have 150 coworkers, that's like 25 people. And then you do another 10% layoff, and there's more and more and more. So even though, like, that's a huge chunk of your team. Now, why did this happen? It actually did not happen for the same reasons that Tango Gameworks had to lay off everybody and close. It did not happen for the same reason that you hear of layoffs at Blizzard or anywhere else in the gaming industry. This is actually because they screwed up. And they admit how they screwed up. In March, VRChat ran an analysis to better understand how they would be able to achieve their goals over the next 5 years. There were four major learnings from the exercise. So they say, quote, "We took too long to add management." This is a big one. "Historically, we've been a flat organization with most of the team being individual contributors. This appeared to work well as we continued to see strong product growth with the market into 2022 without a management layer. Then VR growth slowed and VR chat's growth slowed, and we found ourselves with a team of talented individual contributors all doing their best to help achieve the company's goals. It took us until mid of 2023 to recognize that we needed a product and people management layer to help align all of our talented individual contributor work towards our goals and what skill sets we needed to grow over time. We overhired individual contributors." So what they're saying here is they overhired developers, they overhired artists. They did not actually hire any project managers. They hired nobody to oversee all of that. They hired nobody to make sure that everything's working as well as it could. They didn't do any of that. They said, everybody here has hands on the keyboard. Everybody here is building. There is no room for anybody who is not directly building something for VRChat. And unfortunately, that is not scalable. They continue, quote, "We saw incredible growth in 2021 and 2022, and in anticipation of continued growth, scaled our individual contributor team significantly. The reality was different. Not only did we not maintain 2021 levels of growth, because everybody could go out and touch real grass instead of the virtual grass that is lovingly created in VRChat, we shrank year over year. A scaled team with a smaller user base led to an oversized organization and burn rate relative to revenue and product scale. We hired tremendously talented people who worked on a lot of great ideas and projects, but without a management layer to align everyone towards the same goals. We did not set everyone up for success. We need more time and runway to execute. With management in place, we now understand that what we need for success over the next 5 years. We're in a good cash position, but to execute effectively on our five-year strategy, we need an extended runway with line of sight to profitability. The current fundraising environment is tough and will likely struggle to fundraise without greatly improved metrics. To take control of our own destiny and not solely depend on market-driven outside investment, we're placing an emphasis on capital efficiency to ensure VRChat thrives." So what they're saying is they need a plan, and you can't just have a whole bunch of developers and artists execute that plan to people who have money. They won't accept that. But they also kind of say they don't want to go public. They don't want outside, they don't want public investments. They want more angel investment or, you know, something like that. But they don't want to be bought by a firm that buys up a bunch of companies and runs them for them. They want their own. They still want to own their own company. And unfortunately, they need managers, which most people hate managers, but trust me, they are actually necessary. And less developers and less artists. And ZenMonkey 11 in chat says, yeah, they don't want to be the next Altspace. And ZenMonkey also says, yeah, VRChat is the king of social VR right now. Meta has Horizons, but they are not as big as VRChat. There are other social VR apps that can't even surpass Meta Horizons. To me, VRChat, they are the king of it. And I do have some thoughts on VRChat that I'll share after at the end of this. There is one more thing. Quote, "Some different roles and expertise are needed for the next part of our journey. Over the past 10 years, we've built an incredible product with an incredible team, and we wouldn't have been here without each and every one of you." Because this is an email to the employees. The next 10 years are going to look different. As we focus on getting to scale, we need the right people in the right roles at each stage of the journey. This is painful, and at the same time, I do believe it's the right decision to make VR Chat as successful as we all believe it can be. Unquote. So, S. Jeremy Matt says, at least they're not selling to someone like Google. They will be gone in 18 months if that happened. That's what happened to Altspace. So ZenMonkey 11 mentioned Altspace. Altspace VR was great. It was not as easily customizable as VRChat, but it was great. And Microsoft purchased them. And about 2 years later, Microsoft shut them down. Because that's what Microsoft does with that kind of technology. This was around the same time they shut down Mixer, and basically all that technology went into Microsoft Teams. Or it was intended to go into Microsoft Teams. One of the two. It may or may not have gotten into Microsoft Teams, but that was the intent, was take the technology from Altspace VR, take the technology from Mixer, and bring that into Microsoft Teams. So VRChat wants to control its own destiny. VRChat is really interesting to me. I am fascinated with VRChat. I am impressed with what people are able to do in VRChat. Very impressed. But there is one thing about it which is really, it's one of those things like you don't want to say out loud, and I'm going to say it out loud in trying to, in kind of the most even keel, most lovingly way possible. There's a reason that VR chat isn't going to get bigger than it is now. And unfortunately, it is because a lot of people in the world aren't as, let's say, happy to associate with those who are in the furry fandom. VR chat is essentially only people in fursuits, in virtual fursuits. And not everybody is as cool with being around anthropomorphic foxes and all that stuff. Because it's either, your avatar is either a furry avatar or an anime waifu. I could not find an avatar that looked like me. Which is not necessarily the point of a VR chat, but some people want an avatar that looks like them. And a white dude with a normal goatee and normal hair, you can't find that avatar. It doesn't exist. Nobody has made it because that is not the current audience of VRChat. That is not the current people that are in VRChat. But every different variation of a fox, there are plentiful avatars. Every variation of an anime waifu, you can find. And that's actually because the rigging and model system, the 3D model system that VRChat uses, is the same one that Vocaloids use. So like Hatsune Miku and all that other stuff. So they're able to bring those models in and tweak them. But the base are the Vocaloids that you find in like Hatsune Miku, which is the main one that everybody knows by name. But it's a whole line and whole piece of software is Vocaloid. That's where the VR chat avatars come from. And when your audience, you have kind of gotten pigeonholed as the place for furries and for people who want to be anime waifus online, that's who you're going to get, and you're not going to get the people that would go to a Meta Horizon. So that's why I am fascinated by VR chat, because it really is the best platform. It's the best customizable platform, but because of who embraced them first, it's going to be very difficult for VRChat to be able to be something that people who would rather not be in a virtual fursuit or be an anime waifu want to be around. ZenMonkey11 said, in they just did a premium furry convention in VRChat. I mean, it's great. Like, they did an amazing job with that from what everybody has told me. And I will also say, because I know my name is Bobby Blackwolf here, I actually, this is not my real name. I did choose this name. However, I chose this name about 8 years before I learned of furries because I was very young and actually wasn't on the internet yet when I chose this name. It was back in the early 90s, and I didn't learn about what furries were until the late 90s, and I had already been called by this name. So, but what they're doing is great, and the way that they even interacted with real life conventions, I actually did visit some friends at Furry Weekend Atlanta. So I've been to a furry convention. I didn't have a badge, so I hung out in the hotel lobby. But they actually did kind of like a portal between VR chat and the real convention. And so you could actually interact with people. And there's a lot of neat stuff that you can do in VR chat. The technology is amazing. And the team at VR chat has done a great job with the technology they have, but they really need a roadmap for the future. ZenMonkey11 says, they do have avatars that looks like the PS3 version of you. We have Ready Player Me, my avatars that look like me and the people I hang out with. In VR chat have the same, but kids and young adults are all over VR chat. They do the furry chat, so VR chat is run by furries. And I'm not going to say it's run by furries. It's just that is the group that has really embraced it the most. And I do know about the Ready Player Me. So what ZenMonkey11 is mentioning there is there's a site that's Ready Player Me where you can make an avatar. And I think it even can use a picture of you and figure it, or you can do that type of stuff. And then it makes a 3D model that you can upload into VRChat. However, you need to have enough status. You need to have used VRChat enough in public spaces to be able to unlock the ability to upload your own avatar. Otherwise, you have to go into avatar worlds and you can get an avatar that somebody else has made. But you have to have enough status within VRChat and have friends in VR chat in order to unlock the ability to upload your own content, which I completely understand, and that's good. But it is a barrier to entry if somebody loads up VR chat and they realize they can't make an avatar that looks like themselves. There are some people that care about that. There are many that do not. Yeah, and ZenMonkey11 says you can unlock them in maybe 12 hours of game time, which is true. However, it's the first hour that matters. And I'm not saying like they should allow people to upload their own avatars from scratch, but maybe that's one of the things management's going to look at. Hopefully the new management is like, maybe they make a in-game avatar creation system, like a generic avatar that you can use instead of, or you can use that avatar, or you can go out and get one of the avatars that somebody has created. You can have your avatar look like Mario because they have a lot of game character thing. Anything that has a 3D model, they've put into VR chat by now. But you can make your own custom avatar from their building blocks, which is what Horizon, Meta Horizon Worlds or whatever does. And then after the 12 hours, then you can upload a more complex avatar like from Ready Player Me. That's what I would suggest. And Tireclaw does say you do not need a VR headset for VR chat. You can use a mouse and keyboard. And that's true. And there's mobile versions, so you can even do it on your phone. You don't even need a powerful computer. It started as a VR social networking platform, but you don't need a VR headset to be in VR chat. And there's a lot of people that don't. There's a lot of people who don't. Mike Def says there are a lot of furries who are also engineers or into computer science. So, yeah, I mean, who else would pay those commission prices? Now, yeah, see, here's the thing. Like, I don't want to, like, just because that culture isn't for me, period, doesn't mean that the culture is bad. And I even made the joke that I was going to an IT and cybersecurity convention when I was going to Furry Weekend Atlanta, because Most of the IT department at large companies and cybersecurity companies probably are part of the furry fandom more often than not. And I don't even think I'm exaggerating. It's a lot. I don't begrudge that. I'm just saying that's going to be something that VR chat's going to have to figure out if they want to break out of the stereotype of where they are. And hopefully these new managers will be able to do that in this new layer as they try to scale upwards, because they're trying to become bigger so they can afford to do the things that they want to do. And I hope that that doesn't leave their current community behind, because they are here because of that community. Even though I'm not a part of it, they are here because of that community, and they should nurture that community, the furry community. But they also need to have a space where you don't have to be part of that community to use VR chat. And right now, I don't get that sense. And the reason I don't get that sense is that sometimes VR chat will make their own worlds, like for New Year's Eve. And when you look around, it is all furry imagery from the official VR chat. So that is the community that they are catering to right now. But there's a lot of neat stuff. And I actually just go in and I make private versions of the rooms. And there's a lot of neat stuff. I just walk around creations that other people have made. And I don't interact with anybody in VR chat. I just go in and like look at the stuff that they've made. There's actually some rooms. There was one that somebody made where they remade the Back to the Future ride. The ride that was at Universal Studios where you got in the DeLorean and then, you know, it went up and stuff, because the Blu-rays for the Back to the Future trilogy actually included all the video files. So you could actually see what the ride was like, because the ride obviously no longer exists. So they recreated it in VR chat. So you actually can go and you sit in the DeLorean and it goes up just like the main show did. And it goes up and you actually watch the entire thing going above you. You can see all the video that was on the screen below you, because there was a little TV in the DeLorean as well as the kind of the IMAX screen. So there's a lot of really neat stuff and really neat things you can do in VR chat. And I hope that they figure out how to do that, because that is the metaverse that everybody's been talking about, but it's got an image issue with the greater population. Let's move on to something that I kind of find funny and hilarious. And it's not the first time this company has had to do this. A company making simulations had to remove systems that are based on real life because they are too unfair and they are no longer fun to play in the game. Ars Technica reports that city building simulators are not real life. They can be helpful teaching tools, but they abstract away many of the real issues in changing communities. And yet, sometimes the games like Cities Skylines 2 will present an issue that's just too timely and relevant to ignore. Such is the case with Economy 2.0, a big update to the beleaguered yet continually in development game, due to arrive within the next week or so, or it's probably already out by now, I don't know. The first and most important thing it tackles is the persistent issue of high rent, something that's bothering the in-game citizens, CS2 players, which is Cities Skylines 2, not Counter-Strike 2, and nearly every human living in the United States and many other places. The solution to high rent, at least for their virtual citizens, is removing the virtual landlord that takes in rent, so now a building's upkeep is evenly split among renters. There's a new formula for calculating rent, one that makes kind of an elegant mathematical certainty none of us will ever actually see. So the rent is land value plus zone type times the building level. You take that, multiply it by the lot size, the size of the lot, and you multiply it by the space multiplier, whatever that is. And then there are the complaints themselves filling the player's notification streams. So your citizens will complain. While developer Colossal Order's other fixes feel almost elegant in their simplicity, this one is a little bit more grubby, like real life. If a citizen has a high enough income but not enough liquid cash such that they wouldn't have been able to swing this month's boarding, quote, they won't complain and will instead spend less money on resource consumption, unquote. Cutting back on coffee, bars, avocado toast, stuff like that. Then, unless their income drops too low, then they will complain and, quote, look for cheaper housing or move out of the city, unquote. So what they did originally is they would essentially, like, stop eating they wouldn't complain, or they won't complain until they've already cut out everything else in their life, like food and transportation and fun, and just paid their rent. Once the patch arrives, players may see their citizens start looking for different types of housing or move around the city. According to the update notes, which tracks with the large city model that the writer here happens to live in. Unlike that model, for the CS2 citizens living without unnecessary landlords with simple rent calculations and a bit of belt tightening, it should help them afford the type of housing they prefer. And most rent complaints should disappear after a while. If they still can't afford the rent, well, quote, check your unemployment and provide citizens with jobs so that they can pay their rent, unquote. So simple. So simple, City Skylines 2. As noted by PC Gamer, players have come up with their own recommendations for players facing high rent, some of them perfectly timely and relevant. Quote, zone more smaller and smaller-sized homes, unquote, writes one player/microeconomist. Because just like in Meatspace, where we all live, quote, there are no starter homes left in and around major cities, unquote. So it's kind of funny. So basically, I guess they had a landlord, and the landlord could set prices because they owned the building. And so they could just keep jacking the prices up, because a lot of the algorithms that are in these games, they're based on real life data, real life things. And we get to see how much that thinking sucks. So this is not the first time this has happened to a Paradox Interactive published title, Victoria 3, if you remember, which is kind of a it's a turn-based strategy game. It's not unlike Civ, but it's very much more grounded in reality in terms of like the Victorian Empire and the other empires of that time period in Europe. And they had to literally, I don't know if they removed it or they severely nerfed it, but communism was too powerful. And you could not win a game of Victoria 3 unless you had a communist society. Because communism, when implemented the way it's been written, is actually like winds up being superior to every other form of government on the planet. And that's not fun in a video game. So they severely had to either nerf or do something in Victoria 3 because communism was always the automatic winner. And you could not beat an AI that was using communism. So this is kind of like that, where the traditional model of landlords and you pay rent to landlords, it's unsustainable in the video game, and it's also unsustainable in real life. We just don't want to admit it. As Sharon O'Matt says, the solution for landlords and greedy CEOs is building a spaceship to send into the sun. I agree. And I also agree about greedy CEOs, because there are also not greedy CEOs. They're just in the minority. And we don't want to send them into the sun. I may or may not be saying that because I think I am technically the CEO of Voice of Geeks Network, and I do not want to go visit the sun. Please do not send me the sun. I also don't make any personal money off of VOG. Any bits and subscriptions you give to VOG go back into paying for the website and VOG and stuff like that. Esther and Matt says, every city and civilization type of game has its Gandhi. So that's referencing Gandhi in Civilization. I think it was Civilization 1 that's happened. And I don't know if you've ever heard the story, or you may have heard the joke and you don't understand what happened underneath. So Civilization 1 or 2, one of the early ones, had a bunch of attributes that were for the different leaders. And so when you played against different leaders, they would behave in a different way. And one of those was their aggression level. And they would start leaders at a specific point, and then you could work up and down based on your actions. And Gandhi's aggression level was super low because he's Gandhi. And it was super low. And so you could do things to even lower it even further. And the problem that they did in Civilization is that once Gandhi's aggression level got to zero, it didn't stop. But the way it was coded is that instead of going to -1, it went to 100. So it looped back around on itself, and it got to 100, which is when Gandhi was super aggressive, the most aggressive in the game, and would start sending nukes to everybody. So SJR Matt says, I think it was 2 where nuclear Gandhi became a thing. But that's what was happening under the hood. That's the actual like game development nugget, is that Gandhi was super low on aggression, but instead of stopping at 0, it just looped around to 100 and then, you know, go from there. And once you're at 100, Gandhi wanted to nuke the entire place. Orange Wright says 255 points of nuclear rage. Yes, there is actually an entire Wikipedia article on nuclear Gandhi. So now I'm going to open up the Wikipedia article and see how much of that I got right, because I pulled that from my mind. Each leader's AI had in civilization had a parameter that described their aggression on a scale from 1 to 10, with 1 being the least aggressive and 10 most aggressive. And Gandhi started with an aggression rating of 1. As a result, was only available to wage defensive wars. Once the AI changed its government form to democracy, which was preferred by peaceful nations such as India, its aggression level decreased by 2. In the case of Gandhi, this would lead to an aggression level of -1. It was an 8-bit unsigned integer variable that could only store values in range from 0 to 255, and the negative value would therefore result in an integer overflow, or really an underflow, with the value being stored as 255. Which then allowed Gandhi to become 25 times more aggressive than the most aggressive leaders in the game. And in democracy, that's when you unlock nuclear weapons. So Gandhi got nuclear. So that's what it was. ZenMonkey11 says, I always thought it was Civilization Revolution that had nuclear Gandhi. It probably did, but it showed up first in Civilization 1, and then Civ Rev probably played off of it. So yeah, and also like that's the urban legend. I'm kind of skimming this Wikipedia article, which I really shouldn't do while I'm on the air. And it's like, no, that's actually not, that's the legend. That's not actually what happened. And there's more in this Wikipedia article, but I like the urban legend better because it makes sense to me. On September 8th, 2020, Sid Meier's autobiography, Sid Meier's Memoir, A Life in Computer Games, was released, containing confirmation that the Gandhi software bug I just told you about was fabricated, and a detailed background of the urban legend's formation. Both information and misinformation at the same time. Let's talk about something that we interpreted wrong as well. I haven't covered it yet on this show, but this information came out, and people were very upset at it, and I get it. It's not really upsetting, but we're talking about the size of games right now, and I have a data cap on my internet. It is 1.2 terabytes per month, upload and download, and 4K streaming does a lot, by the way, and there is an upcoming game that a lot of people are very interested in playing, not necessarily me, but it was going to take up 1/4 of your monthly data cap, and you better hope you didn't need to re-download it for whatever reason. However, it turns out that we kind of overblew what was in that data and how much of it you actually needed. Eurogamer reports that Activision has clarified that Call of Duty Black Ops 6 is not 309 gigabytes after all, or at least you can download the core of it for less. This is despite Xbox's store page for the game stating that Black Ops 6's install size is 309.85 gigabytes. And yes, I even saw that on my when I looked at it, because you can preload it if you have Game Pass. This made many heads turn because that seemed excessive. Is it really? The Call of Duty team has now issued a correction with more detail, writing on social media platform Twitter, which has a different name now. Activision stated the file size correctly listed for Black Ops 6, quote, does not represent the download side or disk footprint, unquote, for its upcoming Call of Duty game. That's the other thing, is that there's a lot of 1 terabyte drives out there. And, you know, sometimes there were even some of the older systems. I don't think they ever only had 500 gigs on an Xbox, one of the old Xbox, but it's 1 terabyte. So this is pretty much taking up half of your hard drive if it was 306 gigabytes. And I know what you're going to say. Bobby, 306 times 2 is only 600 gigabytes, and it's a 1 terabyte hard drive. There's the operating system. There's other things that take up your save games, and they kind of cordon all that off. So even though it's a 1 terabyte hard drive, you do not have access to all 1 terabyte of that. So 309 gigabytes is pretty much half of the hard drive. It says, quote, the size shown is the full installations of Modern Warfare 2, Modern Warfare 3, Warzone, and all relevant content packs, including all localized languages combined, which is not representative of a typical player install experience. Players will be able to download Black Ops 6 at launch without downloading any other Call of Duty titles or all of the language packs, unquote. Now, they did not say what Black Ops 6's file size will actually be. However, they said it would share more details on this closer to the game's launch in autumn. So, the other thing that's interesting about that, like if it was 309 gigabytes, which it is not. We now know that it is not. What some of the game consoles do, and I can't remember if it's Xbox or PlayStation or both, is that in order to make the download smaller, they compress the download, essentially zip it up, make a zip file, but it's their own compression. It's not necessarily zip. So what that means is that you actually need double the space free on your hard drive so you can download the zip. Then it unpacks that archive, that zip archive or whatever, and then it deletes the archive. So you actually need twice the amount of space because you download and then unpack and then you delete the download. That's what the consoles are doing. So when you've got something like a 309 gig download, you may need 620 gigs free just to download it. Now, what they are probably doing now, especially with the idea of just-in-time delivery and smart delivery, I think is what Xbox calls it, is that it will download what you need in smaller chunks. So you don't necessarily need to have 620 gigs at once, but you do sometimes need, you will need more than 309 gigs to install all 309 gigs. You might need an extra 100 gigs available so it can do downloads and then delete and download and delete. Fifth Dream says the PlayStation 5 definitely does that, and Cloud Culture said I had to do something like that for the OS update on my iPad. Yeah, because it needs to download, and then it installs it. Fifth Dream said I needed 100 gigs free to install a 20-gig patch before. Yes, and that's because what that's probably also doing, which is, I get it, it doesn't make sense to a consumer, but I get it, is that it probably needed to download the 20-gig patch. Then it needed to unpack the patch, which might have been 30 gigs or something. And then it needed to install it into a game that might have already been 60 gigs. And it might have tried to like make a copy of it and back up things just in case things go wrong. It doesn't do it. So there's a myriad of reasons that probably if something went wrong, you would have appreciated that they took that, those precautions. But since it succeeded, it was just a waste of your time to have to delete or move or whatever other content on your hard drive. Esther Matt says, I'd rather install games on 12 floppy disks like Microsoft Flight Sim in the day. I was like that too, because I remember especially like the Sierra games, and you could even play the Sierra games directly off the disk and be like, please insert disk 3. Until one of those discs didn't work anymore, and suddenly you had a 12-disc game, and disc 7 didn't work. That sucked. Tireclaw says, one of the annoying things about the PS5 is when you have multiple downloads for a couple of games, the PS5 has to download all the patches at once, which slows down the other downloads, so you would have to stop the other downloads just so the big one can finish sooner. Mine doesn't do that. But I believe you. Like, I believe you, because that is something, like, they're like, oh, you can download three things at a time. And I'm like, yeah, and now all three of them are downloading slower than they would if you had just done one at a time. I know the Xbox only downloads one at a time, because I can sit there and watch that happen. I thought the PS5 did as well, but also I'm not watching it download multiple things at once. I'm not sitting there watching the screen when it has to do that. So I believe you, but I thought that might be like a configuration type thing, but I assume not. I'm going to assume that it is not a configuration thing because it would be confusing to people who don't understand computers as much as we do. Questbuster says, indirectly related, a meme in the Genshin Impact community where whenever a new area is patched in, it involves people worrying what to delete from their phones to squeeze it in. It used to be 30 gigs on Android phones a little bit back. On the plus side, they just made it playable from the cloud for mobile users. And Terrible says, the PS4 did it this way, so I don't know if the PS5 does the same. I believe you. Like, I believe that that is something they would do. I think actually it's Steam that I'm thinking of, where you can actually like set a little thing about how many concurrent downloads can happen at a time, because Steam will do concurrent downloads if you let it, but you can tell it, no, download one thing at a time. And it's a setting, but that's because Steam, their audience generally understands more about computers, so they feel safe for that. And I can see why Sony does not have that in. And yes, it sucks when, Tiger Claw says, especially when you don't have the fastest internet. Not everyone can afford gigabit internet. Not everyone can have access to gigabit internet. We have changed in the United States the definition of broadband to be slower. So that's actually how they can state, oh, millions of Americans now have broadband. They didn't actually change what service they had. They just changed the definition of broadband to include them. And that makes it hard to download many, many different files at once. So with that, we are going to take a very quick music break, and then we'll talk to Rob and see what else is going on in the gaming industry. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
Listening to the Bobby Blackwolf Show. Woohoo! It's a number one.
I thought Chatterbox Video Game Radio was number one.
I'm number one. The heck with everybody else. You're listening to the great radio show. Now have a rotten day.
Charles Martinet at E3. Rob Rowers asks, what's Chatterbox Radio? It's a relic of the past, unfortunately. It is a broadcast from ancient times that was on the airwaves. It got broadcast into space. I am sure there are going to be aliens that will find a very garbled version of Chatterbox Radio at some point in hundreds of thousands of years. And I hope Alon is doing well. It's an old podcast, old gaming podcast. Back when we started, so many podcasts are no longer around, and so many podcasters are no longer podcasting. They are still with us on this earth. They're just no longer podcasting, and we wish them well. So coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork, is Orange Launch Radio. Three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And I like to check in with them to see what they're going to be talking about here now that we've kind of gotten past all the Summer Games Fest stuff. I mean, I'm sure there was a Ubisoft thing, too. But Sacramento, are you there?
Hi, Bobby. I'm here. How are you?
I am doing well. Should we tell people not to give us 10,000 bits now? Because I didn't mention that during my show.
We can. I mean, I would hope people would know better. But yes. I mean, I guess we should talk about the change and why people are a little irritated with it, including us.
Yes. So Twitch, where we broadcast this show, where we record this show, it decided that so Twitch needs money. Like, Big Daddy Bezos and Amazon don't need money, but they need Twitch to make money. Mm-hmm. And Twitch is not making as much money as they should based on what they're paying out. So what they are trying to do is they are trying to incentivize you, the viewer, to pay, to spend more bits. They're trying to incentivize more. And what they wound up adding is, alongside the channel points, in fact, above the channel points, there are these things called power-ups. And you can use bits to either put a message effect around your message in chat. You can use bits to make any emote in Twitch huge in the chat. Or you could also use bits to have an on-screen celebration pop up in the video that you are watching of whatever emote on Twitch you wish to use. And they start these at like 20 bits, which is 20 cents, 40 bits, and I think 80 bits for these things. And it's very, to us, it's very disruptive. And here's the thing. You can't disable them. They have decided this is enabled for every affiliate and every partner all across Twitch. They're on. You cannot turn them off. So what we did is we set the price to 10,000 bits, which is roughly $100. Please do not give us $100 that way. If you want to give us $100, talk to me and I'll give you another way to give us $100. But don't do it for me.
Because really, it's going to cost you like $150 to get those bits. Yes. We would rather you just PayPal us $150,
yes,
to be honest.
Yeah, we'll take that.
Good use. But,
yes, it will.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't pocket any of that money. Tiger Claw says it won't be long until Twitch adds the option to disable it if they've received enough negative feedback. So they've gotten all the negative feedback. They knew they were going to get the negative feedback, but I don't think this is exactly Twitch's decision. Kind of like how some of the Microsoft stuff, like it was probably from some of the Xbox stuff, it was Big Daddy Microsoft calling the shots, and the Xbox people were like, okay, everybody's going to hate it. This might be an Amazon thing where they're trying to push them getting more money, and they can say, oh, but it also helps the streamer get money.
Not all of us necessarily want to make our money in that same particular way. And, you know, I think, too, it's just, you know, it's obviously very disruptive when we're trying to record the podcast. But I also think it's a little bit silly because we can't, you know, when we're streaming, we can't see. I'm not watching the feed back on my own screen when I'm actually streaming. So how am I supposed to see these different pop-ups? Like, I guess the message highlight one makes sense, but the other ones honestly don't really make sense to me. So I think this thing's going to work itself out. I mean, I know we've seen the videos of, you know, these very prolific streamers that are having these effects go off nonstop, which is actually kind of humorous to me. Sorry. But I don't think it's going to last very long because these things are only as effective as the streamer acknowledges it. And like, honestly, I don't know if I'll change the price of my personal stream, but I don't guarantee I'm going to acknowledge it. I probably won't see it. You know, so, you know, if you do a subscription, I'll see that. Or if you do a bit donation, I'll see that. I don't know if I'll see any of these other things. So I think a lot of this is probably going to inevitably work itself out because I just don't see a lot of people paying to use these either.
Yeah. So, yeah. So please don't spend it on us. Mm-hmm. You know, do other things. But yeah, one thing I was worried about originally is because like speedrunners do this and it felt like it was baked into the video is what we were seeing. And if you are trying to do a speedrun and you need to submit it, if the timer gets obscured, it's invalidated. But I was like, okay, speedrunners, look out, because it seems like they actually inject the emotes into your feed, much like what we do with Stream Elements on some of our scenes that we have, both you and I. We will let people do emote spam, which shows up on the feed. But if you do it right now, it doesn't show up because we're recording a podcast.
Right.
But on our break screens, yes, have fun. Post every emote. It's great. I love it. But it does not put that in the VOD. So speedrunners are safe. So the emote celebration only shows up to people watching it live. The VOD that is recorded to Twitch does not contain the celebration. So that was something that I learned. And because some speedrunners actually did some tests with it, because you can set it as low as 20 bits and do stuff like that. So until we can turn it off, we made them 10,000 bits. Please don't spend that money.
Pod Culture is asking, can we buy you beers at Dragon Con? Well, I don't waste my time with beer, but as long as you recognize that, that is not any type of monetary thing for the VOG network. That is just buying your friend Rob Roberts or Bobby Blackwolf a drink. Then as is often to do at drag con slash, you recognize that has nothing to do with donating to Vogue Network.
Sure,
I'll take free liquor. That's what Dragon Con's all about.
That's the Dragon Con experience, yes, which is coming up. They're making some amazing announcements. Like today, it's been like this weekend has all been Star Trek Picard people.
Oh, awesome. All,
and like they started with like the new characters from Picard. And then they're like, oh, yeah. And then this next generation. And then this next generation. And not Sir Patrick, but like Brent Spiner and Gates McFan.
We'll see. No, that's great. Yeah. It's a lot of the same faces from the cruise, but I love to see people at Dragon Con. Yeah, I can't wait to see if Garrett Wong remembers who I am.
We'll see. That'll be fun. See. Yeah.
I'm just going to walk by his booth. For those of you that listen to OLR, I'm not going to repeat it, but I'm just going to walk by his booth and be like, hey, how is Curacao?
Yeah.
And just
see what happens.
Completely scared. Just see what happens. Yeah. Exactly.
And yes, like some Doctor Who, Freema Agyeman is going to be there. Jodie Whittaker is going to be there.
Yeah, I saw Jodie Whittaker. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So they added some Doctor Who stuff. So it's going to be great.
And you know what? We haven't even talked about how Vogue Network's going to be involved in Dragon Con this year and, you know, the types of panels we might be submitting or get to be a part of. And I don't think we want to say anything until we have our schedules locked and loaded. But all I can say is you really should go to Dragon Con this year.
You really should.
You really, like, if you've been waiting and you're like, is this the year I go to Dragon Con? Again, I'm not going to say anything until August, but you really should go this year.
Yes. And then this goes for both of us.
I mean, I've been saying this for years. You really should go anyway, but I really, folks.
Yeah.
Today is the day.
Yes. Now, I think the price goes up tomorrow, so today is the day.
Today is the day, in fact.
Yeah. All right. SJ1 Matt says it's on his bucket list. So this is the year. This is the year.
That's right. I got a bucket with your name on it, and that bucket's full of red rum punch.
Yeah. What else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight?
Oh, it's a little lighter on the news, but hey, we still have some updates going on with Fortnite. Pretty still big deal in gaming, especially Lego Fortnite, which has really, you know, kind of changed the game in many ways. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk also about Ubisoft because they had a big, you kind of alluded to that earlier. Are we excited about Dragon Age the Veilguard? Let's talk about the latest trailer and gameplay trailer for that. So we'll talk about all that much more coming up on OLR.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks always, Bobby. Have a good one.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogueNetwork. Come join me. Interact with the show directly. You can also find me on social media at BobbyBlackWolf.com, on Blue Sky, at BobbyBlackWolf, most other places, and also on our Discord server, VogueNetwork.com/Discord. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody. But it may be for somebody who doesn't know about it yet. But we would not be able to make this live show work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. And so thank you so much, SSJ1er Matt, for the resubscription, as well as for Sean322 for resubscribing. Thank you so much for resubscribing. Like I said, all that goes right back into Vogue. We don't pocket any of it because it does cost money to have an LLC, which we do have. To kind of protect ourselves and to also like pay for the website and, you know, do things like that. So just letting it pay for itself is all we're looking for. Not going to be any of our day jobs. So, I'm going to go ahead and hit the button. I got to go find the button. It's over here. There's the button. Yes, that's the button. All right. I will see you next week. In 2 weeks, I will be at SGDQ and enjoy the summer as much as you can. See you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the Vogue Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.